There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk, your chance to interact on the text line at 343-0106. And usually popping when this man is in the studio because you got your chance to ask the sheriff. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joining us. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here, Sean.
And I have lined up a bunch of questions for you just during the news break. But I do want to answer one question first because this would be under your purview as part of the county. The air is part of, is air your responsibility as sheriff?
Well, when no one else can answer the question, it comes to us.
So y'all been getting the question. We've been getting the question about the smoke over Mobile County. Even got a picture from down at Fort Morgan over in Baldwin County, south end of the bay, that they're seeing the smoke. So I did some digging. I went through my Coconut Telegraph. In other words, I called the old boys up at Millery in Washington County.
Mm-hmm. Put our collective heads together and solve that problem, didn't
That's
it?
Right. So we called up there. So while there was maybe a semantic argument last hour, whether it was a prescribed burn or a control burn, it's really actually a site prep burn. It's 200 acres that's right on the Mobile, Washington County line. So Dalton, kind of like what you reported, but it is a site prep burn where they're getting a 200-acre clear cut ready to replant. And all that smoke is coming from 200 acres. So all the smoke that has caused all the discussion out there, y'all, it's Washington County's fault. Now I'm going to get somebody up in Washington County mad at me. Folks in Chatham, I'm
not saying blowing down here with the cool weather, right?
Got north wind that's coming our way. So, y'all, there's it's stumps and stuff on fire. It's nothing else other than that. So there you go. There's the definitive thank you to the folks up in Millery at the Alabama Forestry Commission for putting that to bed. All right. It is our chance to ask the sheriff, and so much to get into. You mentioned to me, I was watching the president's speech down there in Orlando, and I didn't think about the fact that our sheriff would be there, too. That event is called, what's the name of this?
International Association of Chiefs of Police. It's the largest law enforcement convention annually held once a year, and it was held in Orlando this year.
And when you say it's large, you were describing the scope of this thing.
15,000 to 18,000 attendees, usually.
Wow.
And it has literally hundreds of different classes in just about every subject, topic matter, in law enforcement.
Do you select them? Or do you
get to select them.
Like you get a syllabus here of what you could go.
A huge syllabus, yeah. Of course, it's online now where you have anywhere from 200 to 300 classes to choose from, and so you can choose different cycles of classes or just particular ones that stand out to you that you want to educate yourself on.
Right. So, give me one that you picked.
Some of the latest technologies that you can hear on that in preparing for a major disaster, whether it be a natural disaster or other types of disaster. There were classes on that. Then you'll hear from some of the classes will be people that have presided over some of your major events that have happened in the last couple of years, be it maybe shootings or something out of Baltimore or shootings in Dallas, or, you know, many a times the people that were in charge of those occurrences come and make presentations, and so you learn from their experiences, what they did right, what they did wrong, and what they would do differently.
So not just academics. These are people that had firsthand experience.
Yeah, firsthand experience. And then there are academics, and then there's all kinds of vendors with the latest inventions in law enforcement and technology. You get to see it demonstrated. There's literally acres and acres of stuff on display, anything from the latest of firearms, the latest type of cameras, the latest technology, latest software, latest uniforms, latest protective equipment.
What was the biggest trend? Could you see a trend? I mean, was it in drones? Was it in cameras?
Lots of drones. Yeah, lots of drones. Lots of technology with drones. You know, you have different camera systems on drones and stuff. You know, infrared type systems and things, and how you can search out and, you know, program them to do grid searches, all that kind
y'all
of stuff.
Y'all using?
We have drones. We do.
And so that seemed to be a big sector at this.
Drones are really a big thing in law enforcement now, and I think most agencies are getting them. You can do so much more with them that you can't otherwise, and a whole lot cheaper than helicopters and airplanes, and do it in search and rescue or you know, searching for Alzheimer's patients or searching for bad guys that have abandoned their vehicle, ran into the woods.
You can have a lot more drones than you can helicopters.
Absolutely. And you can afford to expend a drone here and there, but you can't expend a helicopter.
That's right. That is right. So you're there, the president spoke, and you were, President Trump addressed law enforcement. And I heard the speech, but you're hearing it through the ears of somebody who has spent a life in law enforcement.
Yeah, I've heard a number of his speeches, and to me, this was the best I've ever heard him give, but it was certainly pro-law enforcement.
Right
off the bat, there was no question that he supported law enforcement, but I was further amazed that he was in tune with the major issues facing law enforcement. One of the things that in some of your major cities, police are confronted with is stop and frisk. Some of the more liberal cities have tried to prevent their officers from using that technique, a perfectly legal technique, been affirmed by the Supreme Court for probably 40 or 50 years.
And define that for somebody. Stop and frisk is what? How does it happen?
If someone's acting suspicious, you have to have reasonable suspicion, which is less than probable cause to make an arrest, but reasonable suspicion that you can stop them and you can frisk them. You can't search them. A frisk is like pat them down to see if they have a weapon.
Okay.
If you feel a weapon, like a gun or a knife or something bulging out of there, that something's unnatural, then you can. Then that gives you probable cause to maybe search and you may find a weapon. And so it's a technique very effective with thwarting gang members carrying guns. Go back 25 years ago in Mardi Gras, we used to have a lot of people coming to the Mardi Gras with guns, mm-hmm. South Side gangs and North Side gangs, mm-hmm. so to speak, out of the housing projects. They'd come, they'd meet at Mardi Gras, and you'd have shootouts. Well, we implemented a program, kind of stop and frisk. We would search if we could search, we'd stop them, then search them and recover weapons, and we stopped those South Side, North Side groups from bringing guns to Mardi Gras. And they knew that if they were coming in droves, that the police were going to be looking for them, and if we could stop and frisk them, we would. And so they quit bringing weapons.
And so that's stop and frisk.
Yeah, stop and frisk.
I mean, isn't that kind of what they said they used in New York to really change?
Yeah, the president said, hey, under Giuliani, the New York City went from the most dangerous cities to one of the most safest cities in America, and how'd they do it? Stop and frisk. But now, when Blasio, he came in and ordered them to stop doing it. And there was challenges in court, and so he dropped the challenge, which would ultimately have proved that it was a legal thing. But because he ordered the police department to stop the appeal, they left an order standing there from a federal judge saying to stop doing it.
But so that's stop and frisk, and you've in no uncertain terms feel President Trump is on your side.
He's on our side. He understands the law. He's been briefed properly. Fully understood it. He reinstated the sharing of certain military safety equipment for law enforcement officers. He said, I mean, it's kind of funny, but you know, he has a comical side to him too. He said, people are shooting at you, da da da, and he said, well, they don't want to give you equipment to protect yourself from being shot at. You know, duh.
Yeah, and this is, if people hear bits and pieces of this, I think this was, it was misconstrued, some years ago when this was a question, because, you know, the idea of the police acting like the military is not one that I like, because police force is one thing, military is something else. But it wasn't changing the behavior of law enforcement, it was just the equipment.
Oftentimes it was giving us the equipment that we already had that was worn out, but because there was a similar piece of
equipment. These are things that they're
going
to get rid of. The military's done with them, right?
That's right. The military's done with them, or they had too much, and so they can share them with law enforcement.
Okay.
Things that law enforcement would buy on the commercial market, that's the exact same item, but we could get free because they had a surplus.
Were getting Tomahawk cruise missiles, was it, Sheriff?
Exactly. Well, there's one thing that came out. A grenade launcher. You know, law enforcement doesn't need a grenade launcher, but it so happens that the thing that launches a grenade also launches a tear gas. And so we do have the launchers of tear gas, but instead of paying $600-$700 to buy a tear gas launcher, we could use a piece of military equipment to do it and save the city several hundred dollars. This is stuff that the federal government, we've already paid the taxes for. The federal government outspent it or overspent, mm-hmm. but instead of just destroying it, send it back to us. You know, maybe some of them $25 hammers or something might share. We've received tools and stuff. We've given it to the mechanics at the county garage. They received equipment with low boys. To lift cases of ammunition and move them around the range.
Right.
We have the little low boys. We receive those.
But, I mean, when you get into the facts, I mean, these are stories that get thrown around nationally, and somebody could present it and just say, and they're getting grenade launchers. Until you ask somebody, like Sheriff Cochran and say, what is that all about? You told me that a while ago. You said, yeah, but we're not launching grenades, Sean. We're using it for the smoke canisters. It just takes one extra question, I think, for those stories to be reported accurately.
Yeah, we may request 100 Army cots so that you can bed your police officers down in the middle of a hurricane.
Right.
You know, things like that.
But if I reported it unfairly, I could say, hey, yeah, y'all got another big allotment of military equipment.
Yeah, exactly.
But it turned out to be cots.
That's right. So we're just, you know, getting back some of the taxes we've already paid.
All right. We'll come back and talk more and get your questions, too, for Sheriff Sam Cochran. And talk about some technology as well. We're talking about technology innovations. This rapid DNA thing
rapid
you
DNA,
told me.
That's the next big thing coming.
Y'all wait till you hear this. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along on this Thursday. And I know it's usually on a Tuesday we talk to the sheriff, but it's fine. We called an audible here, and Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest, and your chance to ask the sheriff if you got questions, we'll get them answered. I do want to ask you this question because you and I were talking about your trip down to Orlando, and then we were talking about technology and all that, and you said, you know, and such rapid DNA. And I went, wait a second, Sheriff, I don't know what you're talking about. And you said not only rapid DNA, but you said Alabama has a registry, and it's one of the leading states in this.
Yeah, Alabama's been leading with DNA for many, many years, one of the first states to start capturing DNA samples from felons when they were arrested, some probably 20 years ago now. So we have a large database in the state of Alabama. And Alabama's one of 16 states, only 16 states recognized by the feds to have a, I don't know if you say a bona fide, but the right type of stuff. And so it's going to be one of the first states that is allowed to participate in what we call rapid DNA.
Okay, so first of all, let's establish how you've got the, there's the swab. Is it like the people that do the ancestry thing and all that?
Yeah, it's really the same thing. I mean, we have little, just a swab and put it in an envelope, send it to the state of Alabama, and they have a lab, and they classify or whatever you do to the DNA to, you know, classify it in the DNA classification system. It's a process they have to put it through. And once it's coded, then it's put into a federal system. And so then if you get a DNA sample and process it, normally it takes a lab several months right now to process it. You process it, and then you run it against that DNA database through the feds. But the technology is advancing rapidly in the feds, and not just the feds, but a national organization is preparing the guidelines right now to set the standards on how to make those DNA matches. And so I think within a year, you're going to be able to start making things in the field, compare it, and make identification maybe in as little as 2 hours.
This is unreal. And first of all, I mean, as a signature, you know, we thought about fingerprints for so long with law enforcement, but DNA, obviously, way more accurate than that.
Exactly. Way, way more accurate.
And also gives you an ability, I want to talk about in a second, to link different things together. But rapid DNA, would this be a kit like your deputies would carry? Would there be a special unit that comes out?
Specially trained, but then it would be like a kit that they can go out and gather the DNA themselves, enter it into this kit, and essentially process it within a couple of hours to where it can then be ran against a database, a DNA database.
Okay.
So you can exclude people right away, or you can quickly reach out.
In 2 hours, because you could come on a crime scene, get the DNA, and it stopped me where I get this wrong. Get the DNA, then you take it back to something at your office, at sheriff's office? Or is it something on the...
You'd access the state database and or maybe the federal database.
Right, but you'd have to know, like, explain to me, like, the, like, here's a database that has these signatures, the DNA signatures for the mutations inside the strain, and you've got skin from under a fingernail or something like that.
Yeah.
How do you in 2 hours make that skin from under the fingernail be something that can match up against
technology? That's what the technology is going to do for us. That's different than what it takes
will
right
take
now.
That skin and do that mapping of the DNA.
That is as I understand it, yes, within a couple of hours.
I'm slack-jawed.
It's going to be a game changer when everybody starts using it. It will certainly be a game changer.
And so, okay, so there's that crime scene. You come upon it, you get the skin from under the fingernail or whatever, and you process it, and it will run that against that database of people that have these felons.
Right, the known database and make you matches. Just like we can do now with fingerprints, with automated fingerprints scans. If you get a good fingerprint, it'll scan and it'll pull up.
But there's a chance you don't, if somebody doesn't maybe I've watched one too many TV shows, but if they don't touch, you know, a table or something, I mean, you might not get, there may be nowhere to pull a fingerprint. Is that true, or there's no gun?
Right. Sometimes you can't pull a fingerprint, and sometimes you won't be able to get DNA. I mean,
yeah.
Some people, there are some criminals that try to prevent from being able to leave any DNA, but DNA is so much more easier to leave than a fingerprint.
Well, when they show you, like, some of that, those studies I've watched, it shows you where DNA is.
Yeah.
Y'all, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. You walk through a room you're
nervous and you scratch your head or something when you're breaking in this thing and you drop a couple of hairs or something. Or you cut yourself on the window that you just broke out to reach through to unlock the door or something. Boom.
You could look at I'm not trying to be grim here, but you could look at a scene where there's blood at a scene. And you could determine pretty quickly is that the victim, is that the suspect, or the victim's.
You could easily, quickly determine that right there on the scene. And so you're not going to be collecting all these samples if it's all, you know, the victim's blood or something like that.
Right.
You're just collecting the right things. Like I say, it's going to be a game changer.
And one of the things, too, we talked about a little bit, you mentioned, is the linkage. Say you get that sample, and it shows up, and this is, you know, one of the things, anybody who's done those ancestry things, the second you get your results back, you'll get pinged from a bunch of other people that are close relatives, right? Oh, you have a relative, you know, here's your closest match, here's your other closest match. So with that DNA, if it comes back and it says, can it say, well, it's not this person, but it sure is a lot like them.
Right, that's where a lot of the crimes are being solved right now. Let's say that Sean Sullivan has been arrested, we have his DNA, and
right.
somebody sits down with the DNA and says, wow, it's almost him, but it's not. But then they say, but it's in his family tree. So
wow, that shortens y'all's list of...
Sure, instead of everybody being a suspect, just people related to you are a suspect. And then maybe, then we'll say, okay, how many of his relatives live in Mobile? How many of his relatives were in this area on that day? How many, you know, go find out where they were that day, and boom. You know, so that's the kind of stuff that technology is breathing down our throats, coming rapidly.
That's unreal. And I don't know how many in any given, I know it changes, but any crime scene, how many possible, you know, when you have a detective looking at it, how many people could have done it, right? You go through all the different methodologies. If you don't, let's say you don't have fingerprints or whatever, you go through the different methodologies of, you know, I don't know, who had reason to do it, follow the money, all those cliche things. But that list could be pretty big.
Yeah, it starts out with a complete whodunit and everybody's a suspect till you start narrowing it down, but you have to have something to narrow it down, which is something I've always thought was very fascinating, the victimology. What's the relationship to the suspect, to the victim? And when you find it, then you've got them. But sometimes it's so large. A famous case, I think, that means a lot to me, and the case where the lady that was murdered on Spring Hill Avenue, the very well-known realtor in Mobile, you know, she was brutally murdered and assaulted and stuff in her own home. And that was truly began as a truly whodunit.
Yeah.
And it took months and months. But guess what? 6 or 8 months later, I think they got a hit on the DNA. And get the relationship was the guy was I think, worked for a cable TV company and had came there and installed cable TV. That was the connection between the victim and the assailant.
Of course, I can see the other side that I would worry about, but the same thing would be true, I'm sure, fingerprints, that I was over at the victim's house doing whatever. I was coming over to install cable.
Yeah, we have to take those things into consideration.
And then I was not the perpetrator, but I happened to have been in the house, so my DNA could have been there. My hair could have been there.
That's right. So you have to prove where it came from and would it have been in a place in the house that you would have been where you'd have left DNA.
This question here from the text line, what's the margin of error in that? Do you know?
That's a whole discussion of scientists versus scientists. But,
sure.
And some of that, again, is still being developed. That's the standards that this national committee is working on to set those standards, which will then take that into consideration.
There still would have to be, I guess, even if you said, okay, within this margin of error, there are three people it could possibly be, then you have to do police work.
Well, sometimes you hear that in some
work,
testimony
right?
now in courts. In case sometimes I say there's a chance 3 in 3 billion that this, you know, person would not be the suspect that did this, you know, so that's what the jury's here. But again, they're going to be set standards by nationally accepted standards by people that are scientists and stuff that put these standards together, and then they'll be trained and they'll be expert witnesses to testify.
Now, you say Alabama, one of 16 states the feds will recognize to do this. Will we have a patchwork going forward of states that are doing rapid DNA and ones that aren't, or do you think it becomes kind of...
Well, I think it's starting out with a few sampled states that are already way ahead of the others, but
because you have to have the data, it's not worth anything if you don't have the database.
That's correct. So you'd think that in Alabama, our database would be the first database you'd want to search, but then you go on and search the national database too, because it could be a traveling criminal. You have a lot of that a lot of criminals that travel. In fact, many times a criminal commits a crime, what does he do? He flees. Flees to another state, a lot of criminals. That's why we catch so many criminals on the interstate, because guess what? They're fleeing their crimes.
You do catch a lot of criminals on the interstate here.
Yeah.
I think about how many stories, how many press releases from y'all or MPD or Baldwin County Sheriff's or Saraland PD that it's, a stop on 65 or stop on 10 led to an arrest for somebody that was wanted in the XYZ.
Well, you know, this stuff is not rocket science. You know, even in the old days in the movies and the westerns, you know, the new guy shows up in town, you're like, okay, where is he from?
Right.
Why is he here? Oh, he just robbed a bank in a neighboring North Dakota town. And
that's right.
A horse. You know, it's just, there's reasons behind people showing up. Many times they show up because they got a job or they married or whatever. But
right. Sometimes it's not.
Sometimes it's not.
All
right.
Sometimes
they're running from something.
Let's talk about technology, too. Y'all use it right now with the Sheriff's Department. I mean, something that's not as high tech, but it's everywhere. That's like social media.
Yeah, social media. We really get a lot of help out of social media. We ask people to follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and we put out leads on investigations or suspects' pictures, and people post it, repost it, and share it. And usually we put a picture out, and within 10 or 15 minutes, we have a suspect's name.
All right.
We love our Thug Thursdays and Felon Fridays. And, of course, you can look up, download our app, and you can look and see who's got warrants on them. We get tips every week on, hey,
I just saw that
Sean
guy.
Sean Sullivan, he just moved in his house next to me, you know. So
right.
Here he is. Now we know where he's at, and guess what? We go get him.
Y'all just keep me on the top of that list.
Carry the dogs out there, too. They're talking about technology. That's one technology that hadn't changed in hundreds of years, is dog nose.
Yep. And I think you could tell them you're sending a drone under the house, and somebody said, nah, I'll stay here. You tell them you're sending a dog under the house. And
they're coming out.
They're coming out. By the way, too, let's see if I butcher that. Bob said, hey, Sean, what does DNA stand for? What's the, it's dio, right, it's nucleic, dioxyribonucleic acid or something like that. Somebody will correct me. It's nucleic acid, right? It's something like, I'm close, Bob. I'll look it up during the break and give you the exact answer. Sheriff, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And always a pleasure. Ask the Sheriff. We do it at least once a month right here on Midday Mobile. And we're coming right back. We'll take you to Dolphin Island next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 138 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Thursday, little Friday edition of the show. Whoever you want to grab a podcast of what we're doing today or on the Midday Show or any of the other 40-some-odd hours of live local broadcasting we do a week, those podcasts available by going to fmtalk1065.com. Just click the link for podcasts. You can do it buffet style there. Find the show, the hour you're looking for, or even better, more convenient, go ahead and subscribe over at iTunes or Stitcher. You can go to Spotify, get your music there, and get our podcast there as well. And on the TuneIn radio app that you use to listen to us with the live stream, you can find our podcast on there as well. Hey, another great event coming up tonight, and another great event tomorrow night, two nights in a row at Cottage Hill Package. Tonight, Alec Bradley Cigar Event. Kevin from Alec Bradley Cigar Company is going to be there showcasing some of his most popular cigars, running some specials. Buy four, get one free. Buy 10, get three free. Buy a box, get five free. That starts tonight at 6 o'clock with Alec Bradley at Cigar Event. Kevin from that company there. And then tomorrow night, Plantation Rums free tasting. Mm-hmm, tasty. Join us in welcoming Plantation Rums to Cottage Hill Package Store. The award-winning distillery is making waves with its premium rum lineup. Wait till y'all hear these fancy rums. Representative will be on hand to let you sample some of the rums and probably give you a chance of getting some swag too. They've got their 3-star light rum, their Stiggins pineapple rum, their overproof 69%, their 5-year aged rum, and their 20th anniversary rum, and maybe some other surprises. But I can tell you this for sure, it's tonight, tomorrow night, and every night at Cottage Hill Package, corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest, online at cottagehillpackage.com or find them on Facebook. All right, good to talk with my friend and mayor of Dolphin Island, Jeff Collier, about a couple things. I want to talk about what's great and what's happening this weekend, and also just do the collective sigh for all of us here that, I hate it for folks to the east of us, but what a storm that hit Mexico Beach.
Yeah, just kind of reminds us all, you know, how things can go really bad really quickly here along the Gulf Coast. I mean, you know, nobody knew about a storm just a few days ago, and all of a sudden we've almost got a Cat 5, so just kind of reminds us all of we live in a great place, but we also live in a place that things can change in a hurry.
That's absolutely true. And what a intense storm that was, Category 5.
Yeah, you hate it for anybody. Yeah. I mean, you know, you don't want to see these kind of things happen. We've all, you know, some of us have been through it. We're very familiar with it, and we're way more
familiar here than they are, you know, in Panama City and Mexico Beach and Apalachicola.
That's true, and you know, it doesn't get any better. I mean, even though you've gone through it before, I mean, you kind of know what to expect, maybe, but it's still a shock when you see what the devastation is after the fact. And so, yeah, we certainly feel for those folks, and
you understand it better than, I mean, as a mayor, you could talk to mayors in those areas, and like, you get to go to the front line. You get it more than any mayor from anywhere else.
Well, you know, we've obviously had a lot of practice, and you know, I think I mentioned you the other morning, we talked at, you know, the Dauphin Island. You know, we've had 4 impacts in a calendar year this year. I mean, since starting with Nate last year, we had Alberto and around Memorial Day, we had Gordon, and now we've had Michael. Mm-hmm. To the extent that we did, I mean, obviously none of those were major impacts, but to our island, you know, we've had some substantial, impacts just by those glancing blows. And so, particularly at the West End, that we'll probably get to talking about here.
Yeah, we will. And I want to talk about also what's going on the island this weekend. Mm-hmm. Weather, here's the silver lining to that storm going to the east of us, is the weather could not be nicer. And you've got the art trail happening this weekend. I know you brought in some backup here, Joe Sheffield, to talk about this as well. Let's talk art. What is the art trail?
Art Trail essentially is a collection of about 40 artists around the area, a lot from Dauphin Island. I'm one of the artists there, and I live in Daphne. But it's a collection of 40 artists, and they're located at 12 different stations from Fort Gaines all the way down to the middle of the island.
So we can spread out our tour here, looking at different. Is it all type of medium or media here?
It runs in jewelry, fine art, which I do watercolor, oils, acrylics, the whole gamut, and it's all well represented in all 12 stations with these 40 artists.
Okay, is this something that we would come down and park in one place and walk through, or park at one? Give me a strategy here, Joe.
The delightful thing about it is you have two shuttles there, which is really a godsend for anybody who doesn't want to walk around or drive around the area. And you have
to walk to one end.
Yeah, well, it's for a lot of people, that's a big slog.
Right.
But you'll have a shuttle when you first come on the island, and there'll be a shuttle down toward Fort Gaines, and they'll crisscross all day.
Okay.
And they'll be let off at all these 12 different stations. People can take their time. And when they come to any of the stations, you get a little book where you can be stamped at every station.
Okay, so you know you didn't miss one.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
And also, there's an initiative that you get. There's some nice prizes toward the end of the day when you get your whole book stamped.
Okay.
And there'll be a little ceremony down at the Art Does It Gallery around the corner here. And some prizes will be given out, and they are very, very nice prizes.
Well, you could give us an idea, give us a sampling of those prizes?
Yeah, for sure. One of them is a very nice condo stay, 2 to 3 nights.
Who knew there would be vacation up for grabs?
Right.
I like that.
Yeah, gift certificates from all the local restaurants and the retailers. Ticket for 2 at Bellingrath Gardens, which is a nice little package. And admission to the Estuarium in Fort Gaines, and donated artwork from a lot of the artists there, and jewelry, and much, much more.
All right, so you do watercolors,
Correct.
You do watercolors. How long have you been painting?
Oh, gosh, since about 1988.
What started you?
Well, I pretty much started when I was a young boy. My mother was a full-time artist.
Okay.
And I learned.
So you come by it honestly, Joe.
Yeah. Well, I think I should. But I was raised on Hollander's Island, right on the bayfront. So
okay.
That's the gist of most of my artwork, is the bay and the gulf.
Well, I wonder about this, because I think about Dauphin Island, because that's the neighborhood I know, and the density of artists there. But you mentioned Hollander's Island. You live in Daphne now. I wonder if we did a survey. And the density of artists within 1 mile of waterfront. You know what I'm saying? If anybody's ever done that study, it said, you know, let's go from coastline anywhere in our country, East Coast, West Coast, Gulf Coast, and go in 1 mile and say, how's the percentage of artists reflect compared to anywhere in the United States? Right. Just my anecdotal, just hayseed ideas, it's way high.
Right. It is way high, and there's a lot of what I call cottage artists.
Okay.
They do art every day. And there are literally hundreds of them on the coast, especially around this area. But not a whole lot of artists sell.
Right.
That's the thing, because it takes a little bit more gumption to get out in the street and sell this.
Well, sometimes it's contrary to artists that I've known. To their genius is in creating, and then it's really tough. What makes them so good at being artists? Well, I say you need to sell that stuff. You need to get that in gallery and debut it. That part of their mind is not as robust as what creates the art.
Right, right.
Does that feel true?
That's pretty much true. I've been selling art since 1991, so it's part of what I do.
Right, but you got over it.
I got over it real quick.
When you
sell your first piece of art, you're hooked.
There you go. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about this. Sure. Duff and I on Art Walk going on this weekend. You got questions? Text them in. 343-0106. We're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 150. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Paul Feinbaum show on the way in just a few. Reminder too, get the coaches show on tonight at 6 for Auburn, and Auburn coverage this weekend. We'll lay out the details for you coming up tomorrow morning. In addition, of course, Phil Savage always stops by on a Friday, Football Fridays. He'll give you his picks and his thoughts on the games for the weekend. All right, continue to talk about what's happening this weekend with the Dolphin Island Art Walk going on, and Joe Sheffield, artist and promoter of the art trail. Okay, is that fair to say? Yeah, fan and promoter of the Art Trail is here, and of course Mayor Jeff Collier in here as well. And this is good. I like how this is happening. We talked about Shrimp Festival going on this weekend. This is a good idea. It's not one versus the other. It's kind of complementary.
It is, and I think the chamber, you know, that sponsors the Art Trail, they purposely picked that weekend because they feel like it marries up quite well. The real great connection is with the ferry system.
Yes.
So people can kind of come and go, and it's attractive to the folks that live out of town that can come down and see a lot of different things and not just go to one event. They can have multiple events. And so it seems to work quite well.
And this is, as we continue to just enjoy one of those great months for weather along the Gulf. Although it wasn't seeming like that at the beginning of this month when it continued to feel like September, but now we've got the forecast for this weekend, y'all hit it out of the park. It's beautiful.
We did, and I think fall is creeping in a little slowly, but it is coming.
This is the kind of, you know, I don't know, when I think of Art Trail, I think of doing that. I don't want to be dripping sweat
right.
yeah, on the Art Trail. So this weekend is going to be fantastic for that. If people are listening to us right now and want to get more information before they come in, I know you said it's as easy as getting down there. You get on the shuttle, but right. a lot of people want to kind of plan things out. Is there a place online to go get more information on this or somewhere to look up any details? It's on the town site.
I would use the Dolphin Island Chamber of Commerce website. You can go there. You can always go to the townofdolphinisland.org. And, of course, you know, the art trail's on Saturday. It's 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. There's no charge for anything unless you want to buy some art.
Right.
But the shuttles are free. The drawings are free. And then we've got an event on Sunday at Fort Gaines, which will be our last sunset concert.
Who's playing?
That's going to be Roman Street.
Oh,
that's
they're great.
Very popular, very popular musicians. And so that's going to be at 4:30 on Sunday at Fort Gaines inside the fort. Admission is $5. Kids 13 and under are free. There's no more than just the art trail as well. So a lot of good things coming up this weekend.
Yeah, it'll feel good to get that sand on your feet this weekend,
Let me also say, Sean, you know, we've talked about the issues on the West End and damages and things. And we just need people to know that that's the only place we have a problem. So the rest of the island is up and running. It's very accessible. There's no problems.
Yeah, you mentioned that the other day because you were dealing with the overwash going on the West End.
Right.
But that was not an issue till you got down to
St. Stephen's area now. So, and that's getting better each day. We're trying to get the roads cleared off. But I just want your listeners to know that, you know, the East End, the middle parts of the island, the restaurants, everything's up and running as usual.
There wasn't any wind damage. It was push of water.
That's right.
It was
just flooding, and it brought sand up on the road. And, of course, a lot of folks like to go down to the West End Beach.
Right.
Unfortunately, that's going to be not available for a little while. I'm hoping maybe within a week or so we can get back down that far. But we'll put that information out. So I just want folks to understand that everything else is fine. You just can't get to the West End right now.
Well, nice thing is where the Art Trail is and where the Roman Street concert are both by the East End Beach.
Yes, so, East End and middle parts of the island. So there's no problems there. So folks need to come down and enjoy what we have to offer.
Now, let's talk about this. It's not every day I have an artist in the studio to talk about this. You said you work in the world of watercolor. Do you ride by and do you have to be sitting there? You know, we have this old cliche of here's the artist with the easel. and they're doing the painting, looking at the thing. Is that how you do it, Joe, or do you get? Have you seen something and took that mental picture?
Right.
How do you do it?
It's a combination of things. I do a lot of. I live in Baldwin County, and I ride around quite a bit looking for subject matter, especially around
you
the
go
marshes.
Out specifically
correct,
looking. Okay,
correct. And I'll sketch on scene, and then I'll put some thumbnail sketches together, and I'll take it back to my studio at home, and I'll put it together.
Do you ever have to run back out and look at something and say, you got this sketch, but did I go back for a second look at something?
No, I usually, some color initials in.
So you sit there at the site that you found and you do this sketch. Yeah. You're sitting there with
a photograph as well, for composition. But I've been doing it so long, it's just kind of like second nature. And I'll put it together and go. I've got a really swell gallery at my home in Lake Forest.
And you said you're obviously going to be at the art trail this weekend,
right.
But people can look at your artwork in
certainly.
Galleries.
I'll
which
have
galleries?
A booth right in front of Mac and Dee Dee's gallery right there.
Okay.
Just when you come on the island to the right, and all of my work, I've got prints and originals, and everything pertains to within 50 to 100 miles of Dolphin Island.
Good.
On the coast.
So some down home art.
Definitely, 100%.
And you said marshes. Do you have a favorite subject? Is that
any marsh around the area? I was raised around the marsh areas on Hollins Island,
right.
Mobile Bay. I hunted and fished there when I was a child, and it gets indelible in your brain. You
right.
don't really forget it.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why we could tell. We could sniff out somebody who wasn't from around here if the Roseau cane didn't look right or the Spartina grass. We'd say, they're not from around here. They don't know what that looks like. All right, so that's going on this weekend. But at the gallery, if they want to come look at the work, of course, that's going to be
right.
throughout the year.
Art Does It Gallery. It's right next to City Hall. Just take a ride on Bienville. It's right to the left, just past City Hall.
Which is something I'd remind people, too, who have not been. Of course, it's, Dolphin Island, my home away from home. Or it's my home, and my home is my home away from home. Depends on who you ask. But there's so much, if you haven't been down there a while, to do for stores, for galleries. From when I was growing up to now, and Lord knows, with the mayor here, who has lived his whole life on the island, it's like night and day.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, we're seeing that, the island's growing not only in population, we get a lot of new homes being built, but also other mom-and-pop businesses, and that's basically what we have. We're locally owned and operated, and we've now got two galleries on the island. The one that Joe's talking about with Art Does It, and then we've got the Dolphin Island Heritage and Arts Council. So, hey, maybe in the next month or two we'll have another one. You never know.
Wow. Uh-oh. A tease. I mean, because, it used to be I could name every venue that was a restaurant or a store on the island probably as a kid with two hands, maybe.
Yeah.
I can tell you the number of places, and it's just grown. I think it's great. I know my family appreciates it. They go and check them out. All right. That's happened. What time should people get on the island?
It starts at 9, goes to 4, but
okay.
I would try to get down a little earlier than that.
All right. Very good. Well, we appreciate it. I can't wait to see your work this weekend, Mayor.
Thank
you. Thank you for your time. Thanks for being on with us the other day.
Enjoyed it very much.
And it's a good way to say goodbye to summer, hello to fall,
hopefully.
And enjoy. Yes. Knocking on wood here and enjoying the coast. All right. We're wrapping it up for today. Paul Feinbaum Show is on the way next. A reminder, too, tomorrow is Friday. That means Dr. Bill Williams will have his semi-recently famous weekend weather scale. He doesn't give many twos. Remember, it's always on the scale from 1 to 2. And I think Dalton can correct me. I think there's been maybe 3 times in the history of the weekend weather scale we've had a 2. I'm just saying. I'm not trying to. Tomorrow may be one of the days where we get a 2. So be tuned in for that. Of course, he'll walk us through the latest in the tropics, which there are still a couple other things out there he's watching in the Atlantic. But I look forward to the weekend. And oh, by the way, too, just want to add this in. Once we get past the serious talk about what has happened on the Florida Gulf Coast, remember how I was going berserko with all the news stories about these mosquitoes nobody had ever seen before that were 20 times the size of mosquitoes that were affecting the people in the Carolinas? Oh, it didn't take them a day. So story out popped up today. The menace. Hurricane Michael spawns monster mosquitoes 5 times the normal size. Do they not have any other, real story to write about a darn near Category 5 hurricane? No, let's get the monster mosquitoes attacking the folks. All right, we'll lampoon that and a whole lot more tomorrow. Y'all have a great one. Feinbaum is next.